It's Allward Reel 2.
I then set the platoon to work at several posts, a section at each, with sergeants and I digging our headquarters in the center. My word, how those men dug and scratched. They're well under cover in about 20 minutes. It was quite light when I saw a ration party, headed by a corporal moving towards us. But before we could warn them, the German machine gunners opened out, and the corporal fell severely wounded. My sergeant rushed out and picked up the wounded man and carried him to cover. To their credit, the Germans did not open up on what must have been an easy target. The sergeant returned to me after dusk with another ration party, and weren't we glad to see them. Then one night, the company runner arrived with orders that I had to report to the battalion headquarters immediately. On arrival, I found a junior officer from each company was there. During that day, we were briefed. It was to be our duty of each of us to guide a battalion of the 76th Brigade, their starting off position, for another great advance. Each battalion was to take up one of our company frontages. I believe I took up a battalion of the Liverpools. In conjunction with their CO, I placed each company in position. In brackets, in trekking on, Major Rich mentioned laying out 2 miles of white tape as a guide. I'd seen him doing this, but had not appreciated the purpose then. End of brackets. I warned the Liverpools of the machine gun post before they advanced. My instructions were to return to my platoon and await orders. This I attempted to do, but to my consternation, I found they had left the position, and then, amidst the confusion of battle, thousands of German prisoners were coming through. I could see some activity going on at the disused house. And there I found my platoon just completing a little action on their own. It transpired that after my warning, the Liverpools had bypassed the machine gun post. My men had noticed this and quickly taken their revenge for the wounded ration corporal. During that day, we were relieved from what was then our support position, and the old battalion came out for a well-earned rest at Hermes. Here I was delighted to find that I had many of my old civilian friends in A Company. I also met our adjutant, Captain A.C. Etherington, who was second in command at that time. 3 officers joined our company about this time, 2nd Lieutenant G.H. Brazier, a Birmingham man whose grandparents came from Cressidge in Shropshire. 2nd Lieutenant A.B. Owen, only a few months before, had been a member of the Shrewsbury School Officers Training Corps, and 2nd Lieutenant P. Southall, a Londoner. Mitchum was appointed temporary captain and continued as company commander. One of these officers brought a rumour from the base that the armistice was to be signed next day, so we of A Company officers' mess decided to keep it a secret. We asked for the battalion bugle band and brought up all the drinks we could and found an elaborate dugout in the Hindenburg line. There we celebrated on our own. We were disillusioned the next morning when we were told that we should soon be going into action again. On the 20th of October, we began to march towards the new line and spent the night at Catnair's, then moved on to Quixey. On the 22nd of October, we arrived at Salem, a town of about 10,000 inhabitants. We found it a very hot spot, which had been heavily shelled. Civilians were still in the town, and our troops were taken into deep cellars, which they shared with all men, women, and children who had refused to leave their few possessions. Colonel Byrne summoned all officers of the battalion for a briefing. The attack was to be carried out by the 17th, 4th, and 6th Corps. As far as our brigade was concerned, the 8th Brigade of the 3rd Division under General Deverell, the 2nd Royal Scots was to capture the village of Vertain, lying 2 miles beyond Salem. As soon as this objective was attained, the RSFs were to leapfrog through and take the next bridge of Escamane. The 7th Battalion, KSLI, to act as moppers up, then reform and go through to a brown line marked on our map. Brackets. My copy of this map is now lodged in the KSLI Museum at Sir John Moore Barracks, Shrewsbury. End of brackets. Before we left the town to advance through Vertain, the KSLI had lost 40 officers and men from shell fire and heavy concentration of gas. Included among these casualties was Sergeant Tom Davis of Baston Hill, who was wounded when out in the street. I'd been talking to him only a few minutes earlier. A little later, we lost our company commander, Captain Mitchum, who was gassed. Brazier took charge, and I was his second in command. It was a terrible sight to see the agony caused by gas. After this, everything apparently went as planned. We mopped up the village of Escamane, where we were surprised to be greeted by jubilant civilians with cups of hot coffee. Then after midday, the 7th Battalion formed up outside the village, waiting for zero hour. and much to my surprise, I appeared to be the cause of much merriment. I had broken my pipe up in the middle of the stem during the advance, and now, rather than be without a smoke, I was smoking a very short stem. Perhaps it was a good thing. We had received an intake of men from the Derby scheme, miners and farm workers, excellent fellows who had previously been exempted from service owing to their occupation. It was their first time in action. They seemed to be quite happy about the whole thing, telling the older soldiers to cheer up a bit. Then came the barrage. Over we went at walking pace. I had complaints from the men that our own barrage was dropping on them. This, of course, was their imagination. It was the enemy shells. Then a runner came from number 3 platoon to tell me that young Owen had been hit. I went to him, but left him with his servant and the stretcher bearer. Poor Owen died in hospital 2 days later. So now I had to command both number 3 and 4 platoons. We reached the Brown Line without further casualties, but oh, what a terrible sight the battlefield was now. We were outnumbered by Germans giving themselves up by about 20-1. We sent them back to be gathered up by the support troops. We had received instructions that we were not to advance beyond the Brown Line. Guns were left behind, and a transport column was galloping in retreat not far in front. My Lewis gunners were potting away. I got so excited that I had to have a go myself. What damage we had done, I shall never know. I found that I had many troops from other regiments who had wandered in the advance. I got in touch with both flanks, and Brazier came along and ordered me to select 2 men and find out, if possible, how far the enemy had retired. This was my first actual patrol. However, we could find no signs of the enemy without advancing a long way forward, so we returned to the position, which was consolidated, and then the 9th Brigade relieved us. We went into billets at Escomade. The next day we were on the move again and went into action once more. Our job was to cross the Le Quesnoy-Valencien Railway near Rooney. The Oxfordshire Yeomanry were there mounted. They moved forward but very quickly returned, so the Shropshires had to advance. We crossed the railway, but my Lewis gunners were by now exhausted, and I feared the worst. However, by distributing the ammunition and panniers equally throughout the platoon, we moved forward slowly, and were now under heavy machine gun fire. We then entered a large orchard and soon reached the allotted line, where we immediately began to dig ourselves in. Southall had gone back wounded, so now there was only Brazier and I left with the officers. We were under very heavy bombardment for several days, but casualties were light. Brazier was ordered to report to battalion headquarters, so I was left in charge for the first time. Then orders came that I was to bring the company out after being relieved with the 6th Brigade. I was to send the company out quietly, a platoon at a time, but we were still under very heavy bombardment. I am sorry to record that one of these platoons was practically wiped out in this movement. I was deeply grieved. Our battalion had a terrible time in this orchard, but the enemy used so many gas shells, we were relieved to get out of it. On the 29th of October, we went back to Romeries after 10 days continuous fighting, marching, and holding the line. Then we moved on to Bivillers, but on the 4th of November returned again to Salem. On the night of the 10th of November, Colonel Byrne called all officers to battalion headquarters and told us that we were moving next morning and were to relieve the guards and then assist in the taking of Morbury. At daybreak, we marched away, but about 8 a.m. we heard to our relief that the guards had taken Morbury and that we would not be in action again that night. Then, at one of our Harley Halls, Colonel Byrne read this dispatch to we officers. To the 7th Battalion, King's Shropshire Light Infantry. Corps wire, ack, ack, ack. Hostilities will cease at 11:00 hours today, 11th of November. Ack, ack, ack. Troops will stand fast on line reached at that hour, which will be reported to the Corps, headquarters. Ack, ack, ack. There is to be no intercourse with the enemy. No Germans are to be allowed to enter our lines. Any doing so will be taken prisoners from the 8th Infantry Brigade. G.W. Ewing, Captain and Assistant Brigade Major. Colonel Byrne told us to break the news to the men as quietly as possible. I went back to A Company and simply said, "It's all over, boys." They looked at me as if stunned. I don't think they believed it. Then Brazier came along to verify it. Still they wouldn't take it in. However, when they fell in and were given the about turn, a slight cheer was raised. Their first reaction was to ask how soon they could write to the people at home and let them know they had arrived, survived. That is the way I felt, too. Then they asked the padre to hold a service as soon as we arrived back at our overnight village. The service took place as requested, and then they were free to do as they wished. Of the officers that were with the battalion, when I reported to Major Reitz on the 3rd of October, only Captain Etherington and one or two more were still there. The following day, News came that the 8th Brigade was to march to the Rhine as part of the Army of Occupation. The route was through southern Belgium via Maubeuge, Thuin, Ivoire, Spontin, Otten, Jubibo. On the 12th of December, we crossed the German frontier at Bio, where the salute was taken by General Devrel. Thence through Mandeville, Kroningberg, Blankenheimerdorf, Juren, thence to our destination at Golzheim, which was reached on the 20th of December. We passed under arches with signs such as "Welcome to the heroes of Bapaume and Cambrai." The Belgians cheered us into every village. Children met us and took our hands and marched into the village with the troop. Thousands of our own troops were released from prison camps and allowed to come on their own. We were delighted to see them and help them. We also had to feed them, so we were soon on short rations. The roads we were marching along were in bad condition, and the soles of our boots were getting thin. It was difficult to get renewals, as everything had to come up from the rear. Railways had still not been connected, but still everyone was happy. On the last stage of the march, officers began to pour in. The intake was coming in without casualty. We had at least 5 ex-company commanders in A Company mess, including Mitchum, who had returned from Oslo. After a few days at Golzheim, I was appointed transport officer, and although I had seen General Devrel several times, he never spoke to me. However, after inspecting our transport, he congratulated me on the turnout of the men and also the horses. Sport was now indulging freely, and I was persuaded to make up a rugby 15. I was the only member of the team without any previous experience. I suppose it was my 14-stone weight which influenced them. It was a great team and was entered for the Rhine Army Cup. We went into very strict training, kept out by Major I.W. St. J. Richards, who was at Brigade Headquarters. Then we had the Welsh officers, J.R. Richards of Cardiff, E.R. Lewis of Llanelli, Captain A.W. John, and Dickie Davis of Newport South, and several NCOs and men with rugby league experience. Matches that are still in my memory are those when we defeated the Dragoon Guards by a drop goal, and then made the journey to Fusnik to meet the 1st Battalion King Shropshire Light Infantry. We defeated them fairly easy, but that did not matter very much. It was a memorable occasion. We were all delighted to meet old friends, and they gave us a wonderful time. Another great occasion was a full-scale hare hunt in which the whole of the 8th Brigade took part. Armed with sticks, we started off in a huge square in open formation and gradually drove the hares inwards. They could not escape. We killed hundreds. The Germans had few men left to catch them, so they had become a menace to their trees and crops. Nearly all the hares caught were given to the local population, who were very pleased indeed to supplement their meagre ration. Early in February, I was informed that I was Group 1 Agriculture, was due from demobilization shortly, so I was back to the land, my dear wife and daughter. I had been privileged to serve in a fine English regiment, and to have had the honor to command such splendid soldiers from my own county. And it gives me a sense of satisfaction and pride to recall also that I served with, if only briefly, those two gallant South Africans, Reitz and Byrne. In conclusion, I should mention that Major Dennis Reitz was at one time General Smuts' right-hand man in the South African Parliament. Also, at one time, he was High Commissioner in London. He was also a great author.